ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Ah, mornings. At this time of year, they change. They go from darker to lighter. Or they do for those of us who've just spent the last 6 months with daylight saving. Hello, this is The Money. I'm Richard Adey. Today, the costs and the benefits of putting the clocks forward in spring and putting them back in autumn. Thomas Sigler, who's at the University of Queensland, has thought about this a lot.
So daylight savings as we know it is widely credited to a New Zealand entomologist named George Hudson, who loved to collect bugs, and he loved to spend time outdoors in the evenings collecting bugs. And that was a little over 100 years ago.
And then, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Germany brought it in World War I, didn't it?
A lot of countries did, including Australia. So, yeah, it was a pretty, what I would say, globalized, at least in the industrialized world, a fairly globalized effort during World War I. It sort of disappeared in between the wars and then came back in World War II as an energy-saving measure, and then was widely implemented around the world in sort of middle of the 20th century.
Yeah. You mentioned energy, and I think that's the original economic justification.
That's right. Yeah, it was an energy-saving measure. So the idea was that when people got home later, they turned the lights on later, or got darker later, I guess.
Yeah, so they'd be using less light.
Correct.
Yeah. Although I think it's now become much more messy because we now have air conditioning and you still need the aircon. And it's no longer quite the justification, is it?
That's right. I think the energy issue is kind of a moot point. I've read a lot of scientific papers on this. And for every paper that says it's an energy saving measure, there's another paper that says it's not.
There's a lot of, oh, yes, it is, and oh, no, it isn't when it comes to daylight saving.
There are studies that, as I said, people lose sleep, that there's some health effects, that there's more car accidents.
Alison Schrager is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute.
Really? I mean, one of the big costs of it is just the confusion it creates, mainly because more people than ever are doing business all over the world, and the whole point of time is coordinating, and people are observing daylight savings at different times of the year. So there are weeks each year where no one really knows what time it is in other time zones, and as anyone who's tried to do calls or Zooms with people in other time zones, it just causes a lot of confusion and sort of disarray.
It's difficult to pin down the actual cost of that. But a few years before the pandemic, the airlines in the US decided it was about $147 million a year.
Well, as I said, they have that issue, which I referred to earlier, which is they have to fly internationally, and you have each country effectively observing a different daylight saving period. So it really sort of messes up everything for them.
Apart from getting confused about what time it is where, there are lots of claims and counterclaims, especially about losing the hour's sleep in spring, and what that does to our health.
So there are some reasonably convincing arguments that the shift itself is disruptive. That said, I've also read some reporting on that research indicating that the health impacts are negative. The idea being, okay, you lose an hour of sleep once a year, but you also gain an hour of sleep once a year. So the plus is offset by a minus. The other thing is that there's other health benefits, or you might call them health and economic benefits, over the 6 months of the time shift. So for example, there's been research to show that animal strikes drop precipitously after daylight saving kicks in. So people are less likely to hit dogs and koalas and things like that on the roadways simply because it's lighter during the evening commute. Traffic accidents go down. Children stop watching as much TV. So TV, for example, in the US, I think TV viewership drops 10% immediately the weekend daylight saving starts. So there's other intangible benefits. So it's really hard to say, yes, it's bad for you or no, it's not bad for you. It's a complex picture that probably differs by rural and urban, by tropical and subtropical, and by latitude and longitude. So again, it's not as simple as saying it's bad for you, it's good for you.
Two of our six states and one of the two territories do not have daylight saving, but mostly we like it.
We found that people are broadly supportive. So there's a lot of competing ideas about how people feel about daylight saving, and sort of every October and every April when the time change happens, there's a lot of media around this. And broad calls to ditch it. A lot of people say it's not fit for purpose, it's anachronistic, it's sort of a thing of the past. But in our survey, I found that people are supportive, especially in the states that currently have it. So, you know, up to 90% in some states.
But across the country, what are we looking at?
80%. So 80% of Australians are, or I should say 80% of respondents, those are residents of Australia, 80% of respondents were in favor of daylight saving.
How does that break down by sex or occupation?
Yeah, so this is where it gets interesting, and I think this is where the debate is a bit nuanced. So in terms of sex, we found females are slightly more likely to support it, not much more, maybe 1 or 2% more. That's mainly, I think, because they're more likely to represent the interests of their children, and you know, kids waking up at 4 a.m. is an ideal. Occupation, it's kind of a blue-collar, white-collar split, and that's mainly because white-collar employees are more likely to work indoors and blue-collar workers are more likely to work outdoors. In Australia, in the blazing heat, it's entirely logical that you wouldn't want or need an extra hour of daylight if you were outdoors all day. Likewise, if you were cooped up indoors all day, and most of us are, you know, that extra hour at the end of the day is critical. So that's the occupational.
What about age?
So you're less likely to want daylight saving the older you get. And I think there are two reasons for that. One, logically, you slow down, you retire. There's different things you do as you get older. And particularly some of the respondents in their 70s and 80s were against it. And that's logical. If you wake up in the morning and you've got your whole day ahead of you, then that hour doesn't matter too much. If you're 35 and you're really running to get to the office and you're sort of there until it's dark, that hour does matter. So I think people who are employed, generally speaking, but there's also a biological aspect to it. So as you age, your chronotype changes. That's a fancy way of saying morning person versus night owl. So you kind of become a morning person as you get older. That's sort of a documented biological phenomenon. And I think, you know, the sort of switch flips in your 40s and 50s. And as you get older, you're more likely to wake up early. Again, meaning that early morning sun doesn't bother you as much, and maybe the early sunset doesn't bother you as much.
The other split is by geography.
The farther south you are, the more variation there is between wintertime and summertime daylight hours. So if you're in Darwin, for example, the days in the winter are about 11 and a half hours long. The days in the summer are about 12 and a half hours long. So there's only about 1 hour of variation between summertime and wintertime. Not a huge benefit to shifting the time the sun rises and sets. In Melbourne or Hobart even, there's about a 6 hour difference. So as we approach the sort of beginning of the summer, the sun starts to wake up a little bit too early for most people. So the justification for shifting that hour from the morning to the afternoon is increasingly strong as you go farther south. There's also an east-west gradient. So the farther east you are, I would say the more you benefit from it. You know, the first light in Brisbane, for example, in December is about 4:15 in the morning. But in Western Queensland, it's not until about 5:30 in the morning. So the justification somewhere like Mount Isa is far weaker than the justification somewhere like Brisbane.
We'll come back to Queensland and to Western Australia a bit later. This is The Money with me, Richard Aidy. We're looking at the costs and the benefits of daylight saving. When we put the clocks forward in spring, we lose an hour's sleep. And when we lose sleep, there are consequences. Jayanta Sarkar is an economist at the Queensland University of Technology.
Even an hour of sleep loss can impair our alertness, attention, cognitive abilities, and decision-making process, actually. Mm. So there are many examples of serious nature, so many serious accidents that were caused by error of human judgment. And these accidents can be pinned down to lack of sleep. For example, the crash of American Airlines Flight 1420, the explosion of Space Shuttle Challenger, the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, Exxon Valdez oil spill, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. And there are numerous incidents of traffic accidents due to lack of sleep.
And that's not all.
So we know from recent research in neuroscience that lack of sleep actually impairs perception of risk and increases the allure of gambling. And this aligns well with earlier observations that suggested that individuals with erratic sleep patterns may have higher tendency of becoming compulsive gamblers. Additionally, it appears that, you know, sleep loss may actually intensify our inclination to take more risks in expectation of potential gains, but makes us more cautious about taking risk when we are faced with potential losses. So it has kind of dual effect.
And And this seems to have very costly consequences.
So the most compelling evidence comes from a study that was conducted way back, quarter of a century back almost, in 2000, where the authors studied weekend effects. So what are weekend effects? Well, the weekend effects are the discrepancies in the stock prices between a Friday closing and the following Monday closing. So they found significant negative effects of weekends on stock returns. And more interestingly, they found that average returns during daylight saving weekends are significantly lower than those of the regular weekends. So even within the weekends, those daylight saving weekends actually jumped out to have a more severe negative effects on stock prices. And these are not small numbers. From the US data alone, they computed that the loss was worth about $31 billion back in that 2000 currency.
That original research didn't show a causal link. So Jayanta and his colleagues decided to use the fact that New South Wales observes daylight saving and Queensland doesn't to test the effect of losing sleep on decision-making.
We recruited volunteers from both sides of Queensland and New South Wales border within a radius of 70 kilometres. And the study participants from Queensland side formed a perfect comparison group as they did not undergo any daylight saving time change, while their neighbours in New South Wales did.
So what was the setup? How many did you have and what did you find?
307 participated in what we call Wave 1. And Wave 1 was the survey that was conducted 1 week prior to the daylight saving change in October. So when we move 1 hour ahead. Mm-hmm. So the first wave had 307 participants. The second wave was on the daylight saving change day. The third wave was a week after the daylight saving change happened. So 138 participants, total participants, participated in that survey.
They tested both groups on their cognitive function and their risk-taking behaviour. So, what did they find?
There were no statistical difference in either the alertness task or cognitive performance or risk-taking behaviour, either on the day of the switch or the week after. So they were not different than Queensland cohort.
So why would that be? Because one would expect to find one in a way.
Yeah, it was surprising to us as well. So the conclusion that we draw from here is that if you have to wake up early in the morning, like the people do who live near the borders of Queensland and New South Wales, they are very good with adapting to the new reality, the changed time. So they may adjust their routine appropriately, and they may not feel the jet lag effect immediately.
So the reason you think that there wasn't a big difference, no statistical difference between the two groups in the first place, is because they're used to having the border between them. This is part of their lives. They know that and they can adapt.
Yes, yes. And the second conjecture is that, the Queensland people may work in New South Wales region across the border, so they had to adjust their time as well, their life as well, according to the New South Wales time. So that may be another reason.
Jayanta and his colleagues would like to see someone else run a similar experiment just to see if they got the same result. Yevgeny Mugerman, who's at Bar Ilan University in Israel, can't help them there. But he and his colleagues are also interested in looking at the effect of the daylight saving time change on financial markets. They took a different approach.
We were actually the first who look in the broad scope. 45 countries during almost 20 years. And we concentrate specifically on the time shift from DST to standard time.
Which markets?
45 markets, different countries, actually all countries of the European Union, and the small markets and the big markets, and Australia, New Zealand, etc.
Interestingly, what they looked at was the effect of the autumn change. So not when we lose an hour, but when we return to standard time and get the hour back.
So we found a negative effect. You have an hour more to sleep. It's interesting. People don't sleep this hour. They actually sleep less. So we found that the first trading day following the clock switch, there is a negative market return on average of 0.1% daily return. We found it almost in 80% of the countries in our sample. Okay, we found these bearish outcomes over the day following the return to standard time.
If that you found, Evgeny, 10 basis points, 0.1%, it doesn't sound like much.
No, it's not a huge effect, right? 10 basis points, 0.1%, it's not a huge effect. It depends. It's relative. Okay, if you measure it in average market return, which is close to zero, is a huge effect. And actually, this is exciting. So you have an abnormal return, daily returns at 0.1%. This is huge in terms of average return.
It's five or six times, isn't it? It's a big difference.
Yes, it's big difference. Why? Because the average return is close to zero. So in terms of average market return, it's a huge effect. However, if you like measure in absolute terms, it's not a huge effect, 0.1%.
But it is a statistically significant one. So what's going on here?
We actually discussed two alternative explanations for these phenomena. One of these like small jet lag in our internal clock, and the other one was the SED effect.
So this is the seasonal affective disorder where as days get short, we get down and our performance is something that we can measure.
So we actually, our data suggests the jet lag hypothesis, not the winter is coming hypothesis.
The winter is coming hypothesis.
Yeah. We didn't find, this is actually an important point, we didn't find the differences between different latitudes. So if this was the winter is coming hypothesis, we would expect a different effect in different latitudes.
Yes.
We didn't find it. We didn't find it, so we think our hypothesis is regarding internal clock is more relevant here.
So that small shift in sleep has a measurable impact on financial markets. This time on The Money, daylight saving. It's coming to an end on the Eastern Seaboard, but not all of the Eastern Seaboard has been participating because Queensland doesn't do it. Thomas Sigler from UQ.
It's an interesting case, and this is sort of what led me to study it, is this extremely visceral reaction. And I do mean that people get really worked up about this on both sides. And it was very perplexing to me because, you know, coming from somewhere that had it growing up and moving to Queensland, it seemed like a no-brainer. It's like, why don't we have this thing? Like, who wants the sun to set at 6 when it could set at 7? But then I started digging a bit deeper and sort of started understanding there was some regional urban divides, but there's also some geographical divides. So Queensland's huge. I mean, top to bottom, it's about 2,000 kilometers east to west. It's about 1,500. So there's a huge amount of variation in daylight. The other aspect is that the Queensland coastline isn't a straight line. It sort of goes southeast to northwest, meaning the farther north you go, you're also going farther west. So people probably don't realize that Cairns is actually vertically aligned with Melbourne. Cairns and Melbourne are at the same line of longitude. It's just that Cairns' differential between the wintertime hours and the summertime hours is a lot less than Melbourne's.
Wouldn't it make sense for Brisbane, though?
Absolutely. So we're on a different, I'm on a different time to you. It's really disruptive to business to be doing interstate business with the time difference. We lose 2 hours a day. So when we get to the office in the morning, people in Sydney, Melbourne, and Canberra have already been there for an hour. And at 4 o'clock, if we need to ring someone in Melbourne, they're gone for the day. So we actually don't lose 1 hour a day, use 2 hours a day. Brisbane is much closer geographically to Sydney than to Cairns. It's just that in Australia, of course, we're territorially organized into states.
So is it going to be a starter? Is there any movement for it?
There is a movement for it. There are several groups. There's Facebook groups. There's sort of citizens' campaigns to get it. In the current electoral regime, I don't see it happening. A lot of ministers have actually responded to my survey and said they sort of privately support it. I think, you know, the education minister, the housing minister have come out and said, look, I support it, but I can't justify it. But there's always an excuse. So, you know, I've been studying this thing for 10 years, and there's always an excuse the state government has not to bring it to the table. And I think that's just because it's too divisive. Politicians don't like divisive things, and this is a divisive thing.
The other state that doesn't do daylight saving is WA. But it's not like it hasn't thought about it. Four times, it's had a referendum.
Full disclosure, my study was actually funded by MP Wilson Tucker, who is an MP in WA. He used to represent the Daylight Saving Party. He no longer does. He's now an independent. I did it, and I used a third-party surveying company to ensure that the results were sort of valid and neutral. What we found actually surprised Wilson. So he thought the state was more divided than it is. My results showed about 64% of West Australians in favor. Now, they have had four referenda, the most recent of which was 15 years ago in 2009. It lost by a narrow margin. If the same referendum were held today, I think it would get up, partly because of occupational shifts, partly because of migration. My study showed only about 50% of the people who took the survey actually lived in West Australia 15 years ago. So they were either too young to vote or they didn't live there at all. But the case of Western Australia is really interesting because the population center is on the western side of the state. So it's the opposite of the Queensland case. So in Queensland, Brisbane is on the eastern side of the state. We get first light. They get last light. So if you look out over Cottesloe or City Beach, the sun sets over the Indian Ocean around 7:20 on the lightest day of the year. And a lot of people say, yeah, that's enough. We don't really need more daylight than a 7:20 sunset. So it's this perplexing case where you do have the regional attitudes reflected the same way we had in other states, where you have this sort of rural-urban divide mainly along the lines of occupation. But in the case of West Australia, the people that benefit from it most, arguably, are those in Kalgoorlie and Esperance and some of the places that are east within the state. So it's the opposite of the case in most eastern states.
It's a very different situation in America. Out of 50 states, only Hawaii and Arizona don't move to summertime. Economist Alison Schrager.
So, like in the state of Florida, the businesses are very supportive of daylight saving because the longer days mean sort of lighter nights. So people enjoy being outdoors, outdoor dining, all sorts of those things, as well as sporting events. You can have sporting events in the evening and not use lights. And as I said, people just enjoy being outside more when it's lighter. So the push in America to get rid of isn't to get rid of daylight saving, it's to make it permanent year-round. And the politician largely behind that is Marco Rubio, who's a senator from Florida. I think he calls it the Sunshine Protection Act. He doesn't like the time changes, but he just wants to go on permanent daylight savings because he thinks it's better for Florida businesses.
I would imagine there's quite a business. The business would be very much behind Senator Rubio, and indeed the idea of keeping daylight saving, even if it's not turned on permanently.
Yes, I said, because I said, if you're a restaurant owner, that's sort of a longer dinner hour, which you have people out for. There's definitely tour camps, but I get the sense the camp is bigger for permanent daylight saving rather than sort of no daylight saving at all.
Camp permanent daylight saving is backed by big industries, tourism, restaurants, retail, sports, maybe even confectionery.
One of the reasons why it was pushed back, I've heard, although I've never been able to confirm this, in America is, you know, we used to have end of daylight saving in October, but it got pushed beyond Halloween. I've heard because the sugar lobby really wanted later nights to encourage more trick-or-treating.
Right. Okay. Well, the sugar lobby is very deep-pocketed. So from what you're saying, there's no real issue of it going away, even if some people don't like it. You guys are definitely stuck with it. In fact, you may be getting more of it.
Well, I mean, personally, I'm agnostic about which time we're on, but I'm anti-change. Like, I think you can make an argument for standard time or daylight saving time. I think it comes down to a personal preference and your own habits about whether you like lighter evenings or lighter mornings. I just am against the time changes altogether because it causes a lot of chaos and confusion.
Alison clearly doesn't want the twice yearly change. Otherwise, her thinking's still evolving.
Although I'm starting to think it's less of an issue, just because we used to be sort of really tied to the clock. But with more work from home and now more streaming on TV, TV schedules was always another thing that really tied people to a schedule. It seems like we're less of a slave to a clock and more people are on their own schedule anyway. So it might not make a big difference.
That's interesting that technology has sort of freed us from the clock in a way that maybe we didn't anticipate, but actually might make a difference here.
Yeah, I mean, unless, of course, you have school-aged children, because they're still tied to a clock.
Oh, yeah.
But for the rest of us, you know, we're definitely less tied to a particular time anyhow.
Jayanta, you're in Brisbane. There's an economic case for the city to have it, but it's a divisive issue in Queensland. What do you think?
I'm an economist, so I'll talk about the economic gains from switching to daylight saving, because it kind of shifts the morning light from morning to the evening. And research shows that when we have more light in the evening, it promotes evening activities that are not only beneficial for our health, but also beneficial for the economy, like, you know, eating out or recreation activities increase in the extended daylight evenings. Tourism may increase and accidents may decrease in the evening. So there are economic gains from switching to permanent daylight saving time.
Evgeny, you're a behavioral economist. Your research shows that switching the clocks is having a financial effect. Should we stop?
I don't know. I have a paper about it. So after I publish this paper, maybe we can consider to cancel this.
So you do know, but you can't tell me. That's what you're saying.
We found it's not good for stock markets. Other people in other research fields, they found that it's not good for our health in terms of blood pressure, etc. Maybe it's not so bad idea to consider to cancel it, maybe.
For Thomas Sigler, it depends.
Thomas, the person, actually has a very radical solution to all this. I would get rid of time zones entirely, like completely. I think time zones are no longer fit for purpose. We've straitjacketed around Earth into 24 linear time zones, and it's just not working. So keep in mind, prior to about 1890, until we needed to systematize time zones for the railway schedules, there were no global time zones. There were hundreds of local time zones based on solar noon. So it's a very radical proposal, but it's been proposed by two Johns Hopkins professors. It's called the Hanke-Henry proposal, if you want to look it up. They propose to keep the world on a constant calendar, but also to get rid of time zones, and the whole world just runs on London time. Sounds very radical, but we already do this in the military. We already do this on airplanes. So airplanes run on Zulu time. The military runs on Zulu time. And in fact, your watch, which is showing you the time, is programmed with what's called a UTC offset. So when your watch tells you it's 11:30, your watch just knows that it's a certain number of hours ahead of London. So that would be Thomas the person. Then you've got Thomas the academic. And Thomas the academic thinks that we should have daylight savings because that's what people are saying in the study. And I think it's sort of the most rational solution. But part of me also has another solution entirely, which is just to push all Australian states forward by a half hour. Now, this doesn't necessarily help us align with the rest of the world, but it sort of strikes a balance between those who want daylight saving and those who don't, and it's almost like a compromise solution. A lot of my respondents actually said they wanted daylight saving in the winter. They wanted to mitigate those early winter sunsets, which also makes sense. So by pushing forward a half hour into what we call permanent daylight saving, and that's exactly what the American Sunshine Protection Act is seeking to do, we'd actually sort of strike a balance that allows us to forget about it forever.
Thanks to Thomas Sigler, Associate Professor of Human Geography at the University of Queensland, Evgeny Mugerman, Behavioural Economist at Bar-Ilan University in Israel, Jayanta Saka, Associate Professor of Economics at QUT, and Alison Schrager, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute. The money comes to you from Gadigal Land, Sydney. It's produced by Whitney Fitzsimmons. Our sound engineer is John Jacobs. I'm Richard Aidy.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.